WMFO, Medford. Unlike milk, long-distance telephone calls, and library books, there's no due date, tolls, or expiration here in the Grand Hour. Good morning. It's the 11th of October, 2023. My name is Arthur, and yes, this is the Grand Hour back. No trainees this week. Good luck to Rick. For the first half of the show, I'm going to play an escape. It was that series. I forget who it was created by. This one's titled Dead of Night. It had an original air date of the 24th of March, 1947. Thanks.
Time to escape. Escape from now, from here, from yourself. Columbia invites you to voyage into the realms of the imagination. Each week we present adventures of men and women who escape into the misty land between the credible and the incredible. Tonight's story of escape tells of a dummy with a wooden head and wooden arms and even a wooden heart who served a master until one day this master heard him say,
"I've had enough of you. I don't need you anymore."
Escape now into the strange adventure of Eric Hickson and his dummy, Toby. This is a story told backstage in many an English music hall and London cabaret when the performers are sitting around waiting to go on or when they finish their evening show. Nobody ever knew very much about Eric Hickson, though many of the turns had played on bills with him, mostly small-time acts, for it was only at the end of a long, difficult trail that Hickson reached the fashionable West End. It was the night after Hickson's opening at the Kit Kat Club. The act which preceded his was just finishing. But instead of taking his position in the wings, Hickson was still sitting in his dressing room. On his knee was his partner, Toby, a small wooden ventriloquist dummy with a painted face.
I say, Hickson, what's holding you up? You're on in a minute.
Are we?
Of course you are. We've got a splendid house out there and I want to introduce you.
Wait, Piccolo.
Well?
We can't go on.
What?
We can't. It's quite impossible.
What nonsense is this? You hear the dances are going on.
It's Toby, Piccolo. Toby, he refuses to talk.
Toby, your dummy?
Yes, I can't get a word out of him.
Hickson, what is this? A rib?
Certainly not.
Well, you're a ventriloquist, aren't you? At least you were last night.
Let the customers talk and hold hands.
Huh?
The stage is just as empty when we're on it.
Toby!
Hickson, what the devil are you up to?
Go on, Bigelow. Get out there and tell them we're not appearing.
So your dummy won't talk, won't he?
It's the very first time he's spoken all evening, I swear it.
Who'd want to say anything ever again after those reviews we got on our opening last night? He knows he's beyond his depth here, Bigelow. He's frightened.
Stop this gagging. Of all nights when you should want to be particularly good, with Mel Baxter in the house.
Mel Baxter? The American ventriloquist?
Yes, the star of the American Wireless.
And he married that gorgeous blonde in his last picture.
Yes, she's with him at the table out there. Oh, what kind of nonsense am I talking to this dummy?
Dummy yourself. Go on, big mouth. Get out there and introduce him. I want to see Mel Baxter.
And now, ladies and gentlemen, before I present to you our next feature turn, I'd like to call on a distinguished artist who's here tonight. You've all heard him on the American wireless and seen him in the American cinema. Mel Baxter! Stand up, Mel. Stand up and enjoy that well-known Kit-Kat hospitality.
Ah, you very, very nice people. Thank you. Thank you. Always nice to visit London.
And isn't that charming lady with you, Mrs. Baxter?
That's right. Stand up and take a bow, baby.
Hello, everybody.
Thank you, Mrs. Baxter. Oh, Mel, did you bring your little pal, Muggsy Martin, along on this trip?
No, no, I didn't. The little toothpick gets seasick.
Oh, what a pity.
Yeah, yeah, it is. He says every time he sees me, he gets seasick. Well, that gag's aged in the wood, but so's Muggsy.
Well, I'm sure Mrs. Baxter is a much pleasanter burden on your knee, Mel. Thanks ever so much, and have fun. And now, ladies and gentlemen, I want to bring on an act that should make our American visitor feel lonesome for the missing Muggsy Martin. Our own British ventriloquist, Eric Hickson, and his talking timber, Toby!
Good morning.
Hey, Hickson, go easy on that good morning stuff.
Why, Toby?
That man over there looks like the truant officer.
Oh, that shouldn't trouble you, Toby. You've been a very good boy, haven't you?
Oh, yes, but I'm not in school.
Do you mean to say you've left school?
Oh, yes. Appendicitis, you know.
You left school because you have appendicitis?
I don't have it. Can't spell it.
You know, Toby, I saw a very strange sight the other day.
Oh, dear. Must we go on?
Toby, I said I saw a very strange sight the other day.
All right. I'll go along with the gag. Talk about Muggsy Martin's jokes being aged in the wood.
Toby.
Let's get on with it. You saw a very strange sight the other day. What was it?
12 men standing under one umbrella, and not one of them got wet.
And why not?
It wasn't raining.
Did you hear that laugh, Fixum? They're forcing themselves to laugh. Do you blame them, Mr. Baxter?
Toby, leave Mr. Baxter out of this.
Leave me alone, Hickson. What about it, Mr. Baxter? Don't you feel sorry for me having to play along with Hickson's old jokes?
Well, now, Toby, I don't know. I have great respect for old jokes. Old jokes are not to be laughed at. In fact, one of my favorite jokes is the old one about the man whose name was Joe Hitler, and he wanted to change his name. So the judge asked him what he wanted to change it to, and he said George Hitler, because he was tired of people saying to him, "Hello, Joe, what do you know?"
Oh, dear me. Is that strange sound laughter, Hickson?
Yes. Thank you very much for your valuable contribution, Mr. Baxter.
Oh, not at all, Mr. Hickson. I was just standing here with 11 other guys waiting for you to borrow another umbrella.
I suppose all your gags are original, Mr. Baxter.
But of course, it's a gift.
And I've no doubt that you hang up your stockings for them every Christmas.
Sure, and I always get sock gags.
When you try to top a real comedian, and Mr. Baxter will go right on top of you for the rest of the night. Give up and get off.
Mel Baxter, Hickson.
Mr. Baxter? Well?
How do you do? Mind if we come in for a minute?
All right. If you like.
This is my wife, honey, Mr. Hickson.
Mrs. Baxter.
Hello, Mr. Hickson.
Won't you sit down? Just throw that dressing gown on the floor.
Oh, thanks.
Well, so this is your boy, huh? Nice carving job.
I'm very handsome. Don't you think so, Mrs. Baxter?
You're a dream man, Toby.
Who made him for you?
Don't put your hands on him.
Oh, I'm sorry.
Haven't you done enough damage tonight?
Oh, now look, Hickson, you asked for it out there.
I asked for nothing. It was Toby got me into that.
Toby? Oh, now, Toby, aren't you ashamed?
I asked you not to touch him.
Mr. Hickson, you don't think Mel would steal him, do you?
I can take no chances.
Well, you sure take him seriously, don't you? Well, relax. I do all right with Muggsy, my own dummy.
So I've heard.
Yes. And you sure surprised me with that little act out front.
Your own part in it surprised me.
My part? Well, you wanted some kind of comeback, didn't you?
You asked for it, Mr.
You needn't
Hickson.
Explain anything.
You see, Mr. Baxter, Hickson's attitude requires a certain amount of sympathy. He's quite aware he's not our equal.
Well, now, look...
Keep quiet, Toby. Mr. Baxter, just why did you come to my dressing room?
Well, professional courtesy.
If you've come here to make some sort of a bargain to buy Toby, it's no use. You can never have it.
Now, wait, Hickson.
Yes, wait, Hickson.
I won't have it, Toby. Never, never.
Whatever the Baxters have to say to me is my affair. Why don't you pretend you're a gentleman and make a graceful exit?
Oh, really, Toby, if you're trying to make me look ridiculous...
I'm succeeding. Yes, I know. Now go on over behind the screen and get your makeup off.
Very well, but I warn you...
Beat it! Pay no attention to him, Mrs. Baxter.
No,
I don't.
I don't understand.
This fellow's amazing.
Oh, not at all. He's stupid, really. Constantly interfering in my affairs. Mrs. Baxter, now that we're alone, may I tell you something? Something I'm sure you've heard before.
Well, what is it, Toby?
You're very beautiful. I'm very fond of you, Mrs. Baxter. And whatever Hickson thinks, you're really a very nice woman.
Oh, now look here.
Mel, I don't like this.
Hickson.
Yes?
Come out here.
Well, what is it?
Just how far do you want to carry a gag?
A gag?
Either you apologize to my wife...
Apologize for what? Really, Mr. Baxter, I don't know what you're talking about.
Mel, let's leave.
You're not going to leave me, are you, Mrs. Baxter? Please don't.
Oh, you're a very funny guy, Hickson.
Take me with you, Mr. Baxter. I just want to be near her. If you're afraid I'll make love to her, you needn't worry. I will.
Okay, Hickson, you asked for it.
No, Mel, don't hit him. Don't
no.
hit him. Oh, Mel... Mel, why did you do it?
Here now. Well, what's going on?
I don't know what's eating this guy. A gag's a gag, but he doesn't know when to stop.
He looks a bit done in.
Well, he had it coming to him. Glad he didn't break the dummy when he fell.
Yes, that would have been a shame. He's such a cute little fella.
Oh, and you do care what happens to me. I love you, Mrs. Baxter. I love you.
Feeling all right again, old chap?
Yes, quite. Thank you, Bigelow.
Oh, good night, then.
No, it's not good night. This is goodbye.
What's that?
Yes, the manager sacked us, Toby and me.
Oh, well, now that's a pity.
Go on, say it. You're quite sure we had it coming to us.
Well, you did go too far with the Baxter.
I didn't do it. I had nothing to do with what Toby said.
Oh, I
see. It was Baxter. It was Baxter who put those words into Toby's mouth. He's trying to steal him from me.
Oh, now see here,
don't... It took us 15 years to make the Kit Kat. And we had only two nights here. You just think what Toby and I have done together. We've fought our way to the very top. After years of cheap, dirty music halls. Starving. Out at the elbow. Oh, you know what it's like, Bigelow. Always trying to perfect the act. Toby's a partner anyone would want. Baxter's no exception.
All right, old boy. Then you'd better take good care of Toby.
No, never fear. Oh, never fear. I shall. He's locked in my dressing room right now, and tonight and every other night we are going to sleep behind locked doors until Mel Baxter leaves London.
Who's there?
Baxter, I want to talk to you.
Mel, be careful. It's Hickson. and the door isn't locked.
Where is Toby?
Get out, Hickson.
I've come for Toby. Where is he? You've stolen Toby from me, and I've come to take him back.
I haven't seen your dummy since we were in your dressing room tonight.
You lie! You came and stole him from me whilst I was asleep.
Sure. I never travel without my burglar tools. Now listen, Hickson, I only knocked you down before, but this time I'm going to finish your job.
Mel!
I'll handle this my way, baby.
No, Mel, look. On the floor.
What?
On the floor at the foot of my bed.
Toby!
What? Oh, Claudia, how did...
Toby, there you are. I found you. Oh, my poor little Toby. He kidnapped you.
Now, look, Hickson, I haven't the slightest idea how your dummy got here.
Toby,
Mel,
speak
look
to
how
me.
He's shaking that awful thing.
Wake up, Toby.
He's trying to wake it up.
Oh, come now, you're not deceiving me. You know I'm here.
Go away and leave me alone. I'm through with you, Hickson.
I can't stand it, Mel.
Easy, baby. Now, look here, Hickson, maybe you're ill or mad or something.
Ill? You took Toby away from me and you say I'm ill?
I didn't take him. You brought him here. You must have. Maybe while you were walking in your sleep.
Mel, he's got a gun.
He won't shoot.
Come with me, Toby. We're going home again.
No, Hickson, I won't go with you. I'm going to stay here forever.
What? This is some trick. Baxter, you've influenced him against me. You're putting words into his mouth.
Oh, look, Hickson, will you relax? I tell you, I had nothing to do with this. I couldn't have.
Nothing to do with it? You're a devil, Baxter. You tried to steal Toby away from me, and now you're trying to drive me mad.
Hickson, will you listen to reason?
No! No, I won't listen to reason. I won't. Oh, no. Beastly man.
Toby. Pick up his gun before he hits somebody with a baby.
You don't. I've got it, Mel.
Say it's not
true. Stay where you are, Hickson.
What? Oh, no. Oh, no, I'll do nothing of the sort. You're insane.
Hickson, you're the one who's sick. I'm trying to help you.
Help me! You're trying to take Toby away from me.
Look, will you let me get a doctor for
you? No! You fool! You'll never get Toby away from me. I'll take him where you'll never see him again. Never!
Hickson! Claudia, that man's desperately ill. We've got to get a doctor.
I suppose we should have called the cops, Doctor, but... Well, Hickson's in the profession, and if he's sick, we'd rather have a doctor look after him.
Oh, I appreciate your sentiments, Mr. Baxter.
What's made him act this way? What's wrong with him?
Well, I can't give an opinion without seeing him, without talking with him. But perhaps your husband may have some ideas.
Me?
You're a ventriloquist, Mr. Baxter, but a more successful one than Hickson. And, two, you're happily married. Less introspective, perhaps. Isn't it quite possible that Hickson, in his loneliness, his struggles for success, may have become so accustomed to thinking as two people that the personalities have actually become divided?
Why, I don't know. Yeah, I can see how that might happen.
You mean he thinks he's two people?
No, Mrs. Baxter, he doesn't think he's two people. It's possible he doesn't know these personalities have become divided. That Toby now might be said to live within Hickson without Hickson's knowing and...
Then what's going to happen to him?
Well, it's something he'll have to fight out within himself. If we can keep the dummy away from him, he may recover.
Oh, but Doctor, he took it with him.
And we've no time to lose. Where does he live? Have you any idea?
No, but I can find out.
Well, then we'd better go at once. He must be separated from that dummy.
Oh, here you are, Hickson, right back where you started.
Be quiet, you fool. Be quiet.
You can't keep me quiet. You never could. Where would you have been if I'd kept quiet?
How can you be so ungrateful? I made you what you are.
You made me. Until I came along, you were very small time, Hickson. Very small time.
You've forgotten that you're nothing but a lifeless, useless stick of wood without me.
A lifeless, useless stick of wood, am I? It was I she liked, not you. It was I Mrs. Baxter spoke kindly to. It was I she smiled at, not you.
But you wouldn't even be here without me.
A lifeless, useless stick of wood. You couldn't even get up the nerve to kill Baxter tonight.
Kill him? Yeah. Yes, that's it. You wanted me to kill him.
Why didn't you kill him? Then she could have belonged to me. I could be with her forever.
Oh, you fool. You know that's impossible.
You're just saying that. You're jealous. Jealous. Jealous.
Oh, Toby. Toby, please. Don't say these things.
It's the truth. You're a weakling, a coward.
Toby, I beg you.
You mean nothing to me anymore, Hickson. You're weak.
No, no, I'm not. You monster.
Oh, more than the mind can bear. I can't stand it. I've got to get rid of you. I'll kill you. I'll destroy you.
Hickson, take your hands off me. I'm through with you. Take your hands off me.
No, I'll kill you. You vulgar little beast.
Exile, stop.
Die, you monster. Break your head. Filthy beast. Come on. Down. Now. Dark bitch. You little monster. You died, you hear? Now tell me I'm weak.
You can't kill me, Hicks. No matter how you try, you can't kill me. You're still a failure.
I'll show you who's a failure! Toby. Oh, Toby. What have I done? Toby. Toby, I never meant to. Answer me. Answer me, Toby.
Hickson, are you in there?
Don't wait, Mel. Try the door. Oh, there we are.
I'll go first.
Oh,
there he is, Doctor.
Mel, we're too late.
Now, easy now. Perhaps he's only fainted.
Doctor. Doctor, look. The dummy.
Smashed to bits.
I can't believe it's real.
Easy, honey. Take it easy. Hickson's breathing. He's just out for a minute.
Oh, Mel. What'll happen when he comes to? And he realizes what he's done to Toby.
Oh, how are you, Hickson? Steady now. You're coming around all right.
There, you see, honey, it's all right. He's opening his eyes.
No, don't try to sit up, Hickson. No. Just lie back and be still for a moment.
He's looking for Toby.
Yeah, when he sees him.
No, don't try to sit up, Hickson. Your dummy's a bit cracked up, but I guess he could be fixed.
Fixed, eh? He said he'd kill me. But I told him he couldn't.
Doctor. Doctor, it's Hickson speaking in Toby's voice.
He said he'd kill me. As if he could. Mr. Baxter.
Doctor, what about Hickson? Hickson himself.
I've never seen anything like this. Oh, Hickson, speak up, man. Quick, Baxter, put that dummy together again.
Well, he's pretty badly smashed.
I don't care. Hold him together if you have to.
I'll do what I can.
What good will it do, Doctor?
It's our one chance to help this man.
See, Hickson? Here's Toby. See, he's all right. Here he is.
Hickson won't appreciate what you're doing, Mr. Baxter. Now you're giving me...
back to him. He thought you were trying to steal me away from him.
Mr. Hickson!
Hmm? Oh, yeah, it's you, Mrs. Baxter. Toby, what's happened to you?
Oh, you and Toby both had a little accident, Mr. Hickson.
Baxter!
Mr. Baxter had nothing to do with it. He and Mrs. Baxter are your friends. They were worried about you. They called me. I'm a doctor.
Oh, I see. I'm very grateful. Thank you. Thank you awfully.
Well, we told the doctor how Toby'd been acting up this evening.
Oh, yes. Well, now I remember. Yes, you were a very bad boy, Toby. You said so many things that I didn't put into your mouth. You can't go on like this, you know, if he acts to succeed. You ruined us tonight, Toby. It's going to be a long, hard fight to get back.
I'm not really angry with you, Hickson.
I'm glad. We are dependent on each other, Toby. You know that. Promise me you'll behave from now on. Promise you won't say anything I don't put into your mouth.
I promise. But still, I can have my own ideas.
Thank you. Tonight's voyage of escape into the realms that lie between the credible and the incredible has ended. But we hasten to invite you to voyage with us at the same time next week, when we will bring you the strange adventure of a man who searched the Brazilian jungles for a diamond as big as the Ritz. Your ticket for the voyage is merely your desire to join all hands aboard when CBS again presents Escape. Dead of Night was adapted by the CBS Division of Program Writing from the Universal Motion Picture. Barry Kroger appeared as Eric Hickson, Art Carney as Toby the Dummy. Escape is a CBS feature production directed by John Moseman. This is CBS, the Columbia Broadcasting System.
Actually, it's not CBS. You're listening to the Grand Hour here on 91.5 FM, WMFO or WMFO.org here in Medford at Tufts Freeform Radio. Let me go ahead and fulfill FCC obligation for a moment.
The way I describe it for people is, my dad shot himself and the bullet hit everyone in his life. It was a week before my 30th birthday and I had this impulse to call him, but I didn't because I thought I could call him later that week.
65 Americans a day die by gun suicide. Safe gun storage saves lives. Learn more at infamilyfire.org. Brought to you by Brady and the Ad Council.
Thank you, Ad Council. That was kind of an unsuspecting PSA for this morning. We heard at the top of the hour, we heard Escape, the Dead of Night. As you heard the announcer say, it was adapted from a motion picture from England. Original air date was either the 21st or the 24th of March, 1947. I've got some conflicting information on that. However, it was the pilot episode for Escape, which would run for 7 years on, as you heard, CBS. Yes, for our next half of the show, Norman McDonald created this one, Fort Laramie. He also had his hand in Escape, the program that preceded this one. This one's titled The Chaplain, with an original air date of the 26th of August, 1956. Elvis was starting to gain ground as a household name at that point. Thanks for listening.
Raymond Burr as Captain Lee Quince. Specially transcribed tales of the dark and tragic ground of the wild frontier. The saga of fighting men who rode the rim of empire. And the dramatic story of Lee Quince, Captain of Cavalry.
Captain,
Oh, hello, Sergeant.
These men are answering surgeon's call. Atkin, Chapman, Furness, Harrison, Holt, Hook, Horner, Madison, Miller, Shaw, Rice.
Now, hold it, Sergeant. That's reading like a roll call of B Company.
It's close to that, sir.
Well, how many total?
26.
Yesterday it was 18?
That's right, sir.
If this keeps up, we won't have a man answering fatigue call or guard mount in another couple of days. What's the matter with B Company, Sergeant?
I don't know, sir.
You ask the men?
I figure that's a job for the post-surgeon.
Yeah, I'll be interested in the hospital reports. All right, that's all, Sergeant.
Yes, sir.
Sergeant Garce.
Yes, sir?
Is, your name on that list by any chance?
No, sir.
Are you ailing?
No, sir.
You sure?
Yes, sir, I'm sure.
All right, Sergeant. That's all.
Yes, sir.
F Company, 14 men on surgeon's call. D Company, 19. B Company, 26. At this rate, we can hold tomorrow morning's drill on the hospital grounds.
Well, he's got most of the garrison over there, all right.
B Company seems to be suffering the most, Captain. Any explanations?
Not till I see the surgeon's report. I went over to the hospital right after fatigue call. Major Trucks was too busy to talk. He said in a couple hours he'd know something.
59 men. It's beginning to look like an epidemic.
Maybe.
You have some reservation about it?
Well, depends on what you call an epidemic. An epidemic of real sickness, anyway.
Real sickness?
I'm saying maybe they're just bored, and I'm saying if they are, it's a hard sickness to cure.
You cure boredom with activity, Captain. Lots of it.
Different activity, Major Daggett.
What do you mean?
Well, take B Company. We haven't been off the garrison for nearly 2 months. The days are all alike. The men do the same things the same way, day after day.
Army life depends on routine, Captain.
Because it's the most efficient way to organize men.
That's right.
When that efficiency begins to break down, do you stick to the routine just because it's the Army way?
Of course not.
Well, that's what I mean by different activity.
Well, let's look at our routine, Captain. First call for reveille is at 5:20. Reveille 5:30, breakfast call 5:40, first call for drill 6:10, drill 6:15 to 7:15, recall from drill, then surgeon's call, fatigue call. Any changes so far?
Well, we might make some in fatigue call.
If they don't clean up the post then, when would they do it?
They clean the post for 4 hours before dinner and 3 hours before supper. That's a lot of redding up.
Yeah, it is. But relieving some of the men isn't the answer.
They could change off. Bindle can always use some help at the sawmill, and the chaplain's an awful busy man, tending the post garden by himself most of the time.
Yeah, that's something to think about. Of course, we don't know yet if we're battling an epidemic of boredom.
No. No, we don't.
You going over to the hospital?
Yeah, I thought I would.
Tell Major Trucks I know he's been busy, but he hasn't filed his receipts of canned goods shipments from the East for a month now. He's holding up our paperwork.
Canned goods?
Fruit, some vegetables, salt fish.
You been getting any fruit or vegetables, Steve?
No, but we're being billed for it. Apparently it's been sent here. And that's Major Trucks Department. You just tell him I need receipts.
All right, Major. Well, morning, Chaplain.
Oh, well, morning, Captain Quince.
Looks like you need a pick more than a shovel.
We need rain worse. I don't think the Lord means for me to have a garden sometimes.
Garden, Chaplain?
Well, and potatoes anyway. And hardy as they are, they don't grow well in hardpan. Yeah, the Major was talking about putting guard in detail on fatigue call. Guess you could use some help.
He spoke of it just this morning?
Oh, just a few minutes ago. Thought you could use a hand.
A hand?
Just a few minutes ago, I put my shovel aside, looked up, and said aloud, "Let thine hand help me, for I have chosen thy precepts." I don't know your belief, Captain, but mine rests strongly on the power of prayer.
Well, now, this help, Chaplain, it wouldn't be altogether unselfish.
Oh, no help is altogether unselfish.
We were thinking the men might spark a little to garden detail. A lot of them come from farms.
I've watched them come over here to the hospital from drill. Some of them just boys in their teens shuffling along like sick old men. I wonder if gardening is the answer.
Well, I'm hoping Major Trucks is finding that out right now. Have any of them complained to you, Chaplain?
Complained?
Well, if they're not sick, if they're just tired, if they got a belly full of the army, they'd be likely to tell you.
Some of them would.
Well, it would help if we knew.
Captain, the men who seek me out know that their conversations are held in highest confidence.
Well, I'm not asking you to break faith with them, Chaplain, but this sickness, whatever it is growing.
You think it's a morale problem?
I've seen it happen. It's as effective as typhoid for making men useless if it gets a hold.
I can promise you this, Captain. I won't give you any names. But if I get more than my share of men telling me they've got a belly full, as you say, I'll see the Major hears about it.
You'll be seeing the sick later?
Mm-hmm. And praying for him.
Luck with your potato patch.
Thank you, Captain.
That's right, men. Put them as close together as you can. We need as many cots as we can get in the corridor.
You got an emergency on your hands, Major Trucks?
I've got a 12-bed ward and 59 patients, Captain.
You had time to figure what it is that's laying so many men low?
I'm not through examining them all. So far, it could be 59 separate ailments, or two, or one.
Anything I can do?
You can get me a bigger hospital. The ward's full. I'm using the dining room, the isolation rooms, and the orderly rooms.
I can set up cots. You got plenty?
So far. The Major knows about this, does he?
He knows there's 59 men on surgeon's call.
What does he say?
Well, he's waiting for your report.
He's got a long wait coming.
Mentioned some other paperwork. Receipts for canned goods.
Just got here this morning. First shipments we've had in 5 weeks.
Fruit, vegetables, salt fish?
Not unpacked yet. Hasn't been time.
Must have been some shipments that didn't get through. Major says he's been billed for over a month now.
It's happened before. Trains and stages, sometimes they're waylaid. Captain, you got some time?
Lots of time.
Let's go over to the storage room, unpack that canned goods.
Oh, I can handle it. No need you're leaving the men.
Might be nothing more important for me to do right now than unpack that food. We need help, though.
All right. I'll round up what I can and meet you at the storage room. No label on this batch. What carton did these cans come from, Sergeant? Sergeant!
I don't know, sir.
Well, any way of finding out?
I'm just unloading crates, sir. I ain't paying any mind to labels.
Open this can for me, Sergeant.
You tired too, Captain?
Open it. I'll get it, Gorse.
Couldn't seem to hold it fast. Here, I'll try it again.
Here, Gorse, wait a minute. Gorse, are you sick?
I'm tired. Maybe sick and tired, I don't know. I'm going back to my quarters, Captain. I just can't...
Gorse, watch out!
Major Trax! What happened to him?
He got to trembling, said he was going back to his quarters, and then he walked right into a stack of crates.
Yeah, let's have a look.
Major, he breathing?
His pulse is very slow. You talked to him just before this happened?
Yeah, he said he was tired. I knew that. He's been dragging for the past week. Gores don't drag, Major Trucks, unless there's something real wrong with him.
I've got men just like him upstairs in the ward. Played out, exhausted.
He couldn't lift a tin can.
Besides being so tired, did he seem changed? Act different?
You mean like he didn't care?
Yes, insolent. Insubordinate, even.
Well, for him, yeah.
Weaver, Nelson.
Yes, sir.
Take the sergeant up to the isolation room. Tell my orderly to see he's comfortable.
Yes, sir.
Captain, come on outside a minute.
What about Gores?
If I told you that whole shipment of canned food spoiled, would that seem like an answer?
About Gores? No, it wouldn't. You can't be talking about food poisoning. No one's eaten any of that canned food.
Not food poisoning. We can handle that. Captain, the men up there in the hospital, 60 of them now with Sergeant Gores. Some of them got pain, some haven't. Some are bleeding, some aren't. A few of them are complaining of their teeth. And some of them, like Gores, aren't complaining. They're just sitting or laying and staring straight ahead.
I was willing to call it boredom. Made a big speech to Major Daggett about changing their routine, lifting their morale, maybe helping the chaplain with his garden.
I wish they were bored. I'd give anything if they were. Captain, I'm scared to death.
Oh, you'll find out what it is. You always do.
I know what it is.
All those men with different complaints that... They all have the same thing?
In different stages. It's scurvy.
Yeah.
I've been afraid of it. That's why I requisitioned the canned fruit and vegetables. They'd have helped if we could use them. Scurvy being what it is, a deficiency disease, it's just about the easiest thing in the world to cure. All you got to do is feed the patients plenty of fresh fruit and vegetables.
Now, look at the chaplain's garden. Potatoes. And not many of them.
That's the trouble with the high plains. Short seasons. Too much rain. Too little. Too cold in winter. Too hot in summer.
My men, Major. If we can't get them the right food...
They'll die, Captain. There won't be a thing we can do but let them.
Reply from Fort Fetterman, Captain. Regret no fresh vegetables or fruit here. Sending patrol to ranches in area not hopeful.
Oh, Fetterman's too close. We can't raise vegetables, they can't. Who else are you telegraphed, Lieutenant?
Fort Sanders, Camp Brown, Fort Bridger.
Camp Brown's over in the Wind River Range. Bridger's at least 100 miles further.
Well, sir, Major Daggett said to try them all.
They're too far away.
I know that, sir.
Sure you do, Mr. Syberts, but... keep trying.
I will, sir.
And any word you get, no matter where it's from, don't turn any of it down.
Yes, sir. Captain?
Yeah?
Sir, I've read a lot about scurvy, what causes it, what cures it. It can be cured.
With the right food.
The British Navy practically wiped it out as long ago as 1795, so... There is hope, Captain.
Wiped it out? How, Mr. Syberts?
Lime juice?
Yeah. Lime juice.
Yes, sir. They made it a regulation. Each man was served a specific quantity of lime juice each day, and the threat of scurvy to ship crews just vanished.
Mr. Syberts, limes are kind of hard to come by in the high plains.
Well, I just thought if you knew there was hope, you'd... feel better about things, Captain.
I'm not the one to worry about.
I know, sir, but...
But thanks, Lieutenant. And if you hear about any lines, even as far away as Fort Bridger, then don't turn them down.
The last two settlers have spoken of a huckster, Captain, of a man who's been through here selling eggs and fresh vegetables.
Oh, 5 days ago, Chaplain. He could be anywhere by now.
The last settler said 5 days. The one before said six. We're getting closer to him.
You still praying, Chaplain?
Of course.
You're long on hope, aren't you, sir?
You call it hope, Captain. My word is faith. But the word doesn't matter. I'm long on it, yes. I've built my life on it.
Yeah. Another settler ahead.
And a fortunate settler, too. That stream is life to him.
Yeah, Lodgepole Creek.
It's a better day, Captain.
I'll take your word for that.
No, even for a realist, it's a better day. We sent two sacks of onions back to Port Laramie this morning. We didn't do that yesterday.
All right, Chaplain. It's a better day. Patrol! Halt! Afternoon, mister.
Afternoon to you, soldiers.
We're down from Fort Laramie looking for fresh fruit, vegetables.
Oh, well, you got a good bit of looking ahead of you, soldier. Got potatoes.
Oh, we got potatoes, too.
I had some corn. But then, you know, my woman took sick, and caring for her, the corn went bad. Dried out. It makes a good fire, though, that dry corn. I've been using it to cook with.
Saving the logs, are you?
Oh, for winter. You know, it's cold as sin up here in the winters. I don't lay in dry logs now, my woman will just freeze this winter.
She's in the cabin, your wife?
You know, she ain't moved out of that cabin there in more than a month now.
Well, would you mind if I went in to see her?
Say, you some kind of doctor?
This is our chaplain, post-chaplain at Fort Laramie.
Chaplain? That's like a parson, huh? Mm.
Like a parson, mister.
Well, she's a God-fearing woman. You know, you'll find that book there. It's right beside the bed. And it just might ease her some talking to a parson.
There's time, Captain?
You know what you have to do, Chaplain. Corporal Jenkins.
Yes, sir.
Move the patrol down to the stream. We'll water the horses while we're stopped.
Yes, sir.
It's just a pity you didn't come through here a couple days ago, soldier. There's a huckster come through. I don't know as he had any fruit, but he had himself a big load of vegetables.
Yeah, we've been hearing about him.
If I'd had the price, I'd have stocked up for the woman and me. But, they come high. They come too high.
Heading south, was he?
He said he was bound for Cheyenne. Maybe they can meet his price in town that way, but it's too steep for a nester. See, I had my eye on some old stalks he had that was going to seed, there was, and I figured for planting, you know? But he just wasn't a mind to trade nothing. He said he'd let them spoil before he cut his price.
What were you trying to trade, potatoes?
Oh, he wouldn't hear to that. No, sir, I was willing to trade him... Say, soldier... You got thirst? I mean a real thirst, eh? Here, now, that parson, he's going to be a while. You come along with me. I keep it in the cellar, you know, now that my woman don't use it for storing what she puts up.
What are you talking about, mister?
Oh, you'll see. You'll see. Here now. I just keep it right back here. Now, mind your feet. There's a sod step or two, and it's pitch dark. Whereas once we get there, dark sure don't matter.
Damp down here. Kind of musty.
Oh, it's all right. You ain't got a complaint in the world. Now, where... there. See, what we're looking for, you don't have to see. Help yourself, soldier.
What is that? Corn whiskey?
Corn whiskey? I don't have the patience for that. I told you anyways, I had to burn my corn. No, sirree. This is hard cider. Here.
No, you drink it.
I mean to. It's just more neighborly if you take a swig first. Come on. And get on with it. I'm dry as a bone.
I'm not too keen on Hart's Adder.
You're thinking about the other man. Well, now, so this here little jug, this wouldn't make the rounds in a hot day like this. Go on.
All right.
Now, that hits the spot, don't it?
That's pure vinegar.
Vinegar? Oh, I call that right picayune, my way of thinking. Here, give me that jug. I got a better feeling for it. Oh, that's smooth. That's smooth. Swig of that now and again. Just make a man forget his lot in life.
Now, wait a minute. How much of that you got, mister?
That kind of grows on you, don't it? You know what? It's going to make you feel better once you come out of the coffin.
No, I want to know. How much you got?
Oh, I got a good bit of it. I make this up every year whether there's need or not. I do. My woman, now, she just can't understand how there's no crocks around. Praise be, I got it put up in pickle barrels in all sizes, jugs, up and down.
I'll buy it from you, all of it. At a fair price.
Well, now, we could use the money. All of it?
Yeah, I'll buy it all. And give you back two jugs. Fair?
Praise be, soldier. I'd done a sight of praying, but I never figured...
Captain Quince, are you down there?
I'm coming right up, Chaplain. Well, mister?
Well, I don't see how I can rightly refuse. You pay for what you give me back, huh?
You set a price. I'll talk to you later.
I was looking for you down at the stream.
Captain, our prayers have been answered.
All along the stream, both sides are wild berries. Raspberries, currants, blackberries, all kinds.
Of course.
The men are picking them now. We'll take back all we can carry, and I'm selecting some strong young bushes to transplant along the North Platte. You're very pleased, aren't you?
I'm more hysterical than anything.
And that good woman in the cabin says the Indians on the Cheyenne Agency grow asparagus and rhubarb like it was buffalo grass.
Captain, have you been drinking?
I sure have, Chaplain. Vinegar.
Vinegar?
Well, the settler calls it hard cider, and maybe it was once, but it's sure pure vinegar now.
Vinegar? Why, Major Truck said vinegar could be a help in arresting the tide of scurvy.
Yeah, he did. I'm buying all the settlers got.
You're certain it's vinegar? Because if it isn't, I'd have to search my soul.
The Chaplain, take my word. It's vinegar. And look on it this way. God moves in a mysterious way, his wonders to perform.
Yes. Yes, Captain, I believe I will.
That you, Captain?
What does it look like, a stack of crates?
Yeah.
You still playing at being a sick man, Gorse?
It's a good life. Beats being a first sergeant.
Well, B Company can still use one. Any time you want to give up your act here and come back.
Ooh, I ain't coming back as a first sergeant this time, Captain. I've been doing a lot of dreaming about that.
Well, we might break down a stripe or two, seeing you probably couldn't handle the work anyway.
You just keep talking, Captain. I'll keep dreaming. You'll see, I'm coming back at least a major, maybe even a colonel.
Going to take over the post now, are you?
No, just B Company. Just for a day or two, long enough to get a captain busted out.
I never counted on your gratitude.
Now, we got to get a captain for B Company who don't go around foisting vinegar on a sick man in the name of hard cider.
You're talking out of a fever. I'm going to tell Major Trucks to keep you here, if it isn't too hard on the rest of the ward. Go on, go back to your dream.
Captain?
Yeah?
Thanks.
You get well. One day we'll go back and thank that settler.
Fort Laramie is produced and directed by Norman McDonald and stars Raymond Burr as Lee Quince, Captain of Cavalry, with Vic Perrin as Sergeant Gorse. The script was specially written for Fort Laramie by Kathleen Height, with sound patterns by Bill James and Tom Henley. Musical supervision by Amerigo Marino. Featured in the cast were Parley Bear, Paul Duboff, and Lawrence Dobkin. Jack Moyles is Major Daggett, and Harry Bartell is Lieutenant Syberts.
Company, attention! Dismiss!
Next week, another transcribed story of the Northwest frontier and the troopers who fought under Lee Quince, Captain of Cavalry. Handicap workers are good workers. With proper retraining, their job records compare favorably on the average with able-bodied men and women on the same jobs. The government is currently retraining increasing numbers of handicapped workers, and industry must be ready to absorb them. For information on the program, write the Veterans Administration, Washington 25, D.C. That's the Veterans Administration, Washington 25, D.C. This has been a CBS Radio public service message.
Nope, not a CBS public service. Well, it was at the time, but you've been listening to the Grand Hour here on 91.5 FM and or WMFO.org, Medford Tufts Freeform Radio. That was Fort Laramie, titled The Chaplain. It had an original air date of the 26th of August, 1956. I'm going to try and get this request off quick. From Little Arthur, he asked me to play something when I was preparing the show, so this is it.
The first Noel, the angel did say, was to certain poor shepherds in fields as they lay, in fields where they lay keeping their sheep on a cold winter's night that was so deep. No. No.